First, thank you for inviting me to be here. It's great to be with you. Again, I'm Bruce Spada, Director of WISPIRG, the Wisconsin Public Interest Research Group. And I hope this morning, I was just telling Erica a little while ago, to really shatter some of the assumptions that you might have about transportation and some of the trends. We have been doing a lot of research looking at how Wisconsinites, how Americans are traveling, some of the demographic changes, some of the travel trends, the changes in travel trends. And what we're seeing is a really dramatic shift in the way people are getting around. And you know, what we're talking about here when we talk about transportation are our tax dollars. Our transportation system is a publicly funded system. And so as a public interest group, we believe that we should be investing them wisely and efficiently and making sure that we, the taxpayers, are getting bang for the buck. And certainly, it is our strong opinion that there are many instances where we are not doing that. We are over-investing in areas that are wasteful, and we are under-investing in areas that are critically important to our communities. So that's what I want to share with you this morning. Let me just briefly say a little bit more about who we are in case you're not familiar with this. And I brought some materials which I can pass out or put out on a table later, both reports that have the data that I'll be talking about, but also just a little bit more information about our group. The WISPIRG Foundation, that's the research and education part of our organization, which is grant funded. But then we also are a statewide membership organization. So a shameless plug, if you support the work we do, we don't take any corporate or union money. We are able to remain true to just advocating what's in the public's best interest because we are supported by people like you all over Wisconsin. So, but really our role is both to provide informed research about the issues and problems that we face in Wisconsin, but also to get out into communities and to organize and mobilize public support to make sure that our elected officials are responding to the needs in our communities. And so I'll quickly mention we're going to be targeting 10 communities across the state soon, organizing local folks around transit needs. So if you're a community that would like to see more investment and engagement in transit, the goal will be to actually get state elected officials to do office hours on the bus and actually get out there on our transit systems and experience with community members, their constituents, the importance of transit to their community. So if you're interested in being one of those 10 communities, talk to me. We'd love to work with you on that. So what I want to talk about today, and I'm going to throw a lot of information at you. I have 30 slides, so hopefully I can do this in a way that is easy to process. But here's what I'm going to do. Talk about the rise and fall of the driving boom, why it matters, and what the future might look like. A few policy recommendations, and then I don't know that we'll have time for Q&A. If we do, great, but I think at the end we have some time for that. So we'll see if we have time for that during my presentation. So let's start by talking about the rise and fall of the driving boom. And as I said, I'm going to hopefully shatter or challenge what might be some of your assumptions about the way we get around. So as I think everyone here is aware, really since World War II, we've seen a dramatic increase in driving across the country. In Wisconsin, and really I should say, and I'll point this out in a few places throughout, but a lot of our data is national, but then we also have a lot of Wisconsin data, and really what's happening in Wisconsin and really states across the country is mirroring what we're seeing on the national level. There's not much of a difference in these trends. But this is nationally looking at vehicle miles traveled, or VMTs, as you might catch me, I say that a lot, that's vehicle miles traveled, per capita averaged a 2.5% increase from the end of World War II through 2004. There were a lot of reasons for this. Gasoline was cheap. We had a huge influx of workers into the labor force, particularly among women after World War II. Also, we saw the baby boom generation driving a lot. They were at the peak of the time at which they're driving, which is kind of the peak of their careers. And the age range we consider 35 to 54 when folks are in the kind of peak of their careers, and certainly we saw a lot of them driving. We really saw a huge increase in vehicle ownership and people having driver's license. So a lot of factors that drove a dramatic increase in driving across the country and here in Wisconsin. Even more stark is the fact that we actually saw the total number of VMTs, or vehicle miles traveled, increase by 3.8% on average each year. And this was driven both by the fact that the average number of miles driven per person increased each year, and more people were driving. So we saw a dramatic increase in the total number of miles driven. But something changed in 2004. And this is what we've seen happen since that year. And we, through our research, are now proclaiming that it is the end of the driving boom. And I'm going to talk about this quite a bit, but we are seeing some really dramatic shifts in the way we are getting around and how much we're driving. So this is miles per capita, and as you can see, we're seeing a pretty dramatic decline. Also, in the number of total vehicle miles traveled, so that peaked a little later in 2007, but as you can see, it's a very similar trend where we are just driving in total much less as well. But here's where it gets really interesting. Where we're seeing the most dramatic shift is in the so-called millennial generation. And as you can see here, driving among young people is dropping at a much faster rate than the rest of the population. So as you can see here, youth driving from 2001 to 2009 declined by 23% among this demographic. We also saw the number of young people getting driver's license decline. So not only are they driving less, but fewer people are choosing to even get a vehicle or even a driver's license. And I don't know if this is the experience of any of you in this room, but you know, my niece actually does have a driver's license, but she'll say to me, you know, I care less about driving, I'd much rather be on my phone. Which I'll show you some of the research we've looked at there as well. And then, as I said before, Wisconsin is no different. This looks at vehicle miles traveled in Wisconsin. And as you can see, just like the national trends in 2004, here as well, we have started to see a decline in driving. And the average Wisconsinite, as you can see here, now drives about as much in a year as we did in the middle of President Clinton's administration, 1997. And total vehicle miles traveled has fallen by 3% since 2004. So again, this mirrors what we're seeing on the national level. Another really interesting demographic trend, which relates to both fixed route and specialized transit, and just what we're investing in here in Wisconsin, is that, and you might have heard back about, I think it was about a year ago, a study came out looking at how there is projected to be a dramatic increase in the percentage of our population that's elderly. And so this reflects the findings of that report, and as you can see, steadily through 2040, the percentage of our population that is 65 and older is projected to increase. And, you know, I think it's obvious why this is important when it comes to transit, specialized and fixed route transit. But, you know, certainly we know that, we want to make sure that folks have access to transportation regardless of their age, their ability. We know that as folks get older, it's important to have more options for them. And in fact, there was a great study done by Transportation for America, which was a national coalition working to reform the federal transportation bill. And the one thing they looked at is the percentage of senior citizens that have access to transit in their community. So having an option for, you know, getting to the grocery store or getting to the doctor or getting to work or whatever it might be. And what they found is that I'm actually bringing up the report and I'm forgetting the exact figure, but it was something like 8 out of 10 communities that they looked at in Wisconsin, which were mostly urban areas, less than 50% of the population had a viable transit option of the senior citizen population. So, you know, we know this is a big problem, and certainly as our population ages, having access to transit is certainly a big concern. So, these are the trends. Let's talk about what it means for our transportation future. So I'll talk about why future driving trends matter, why are millennials especially important, and what does the future look like? So why does this matter? Well, you know, as I'm sure everyone here is already well aware, the transportation investments we make now should last for 30 to 50 years. We build transportation infrastructure for the future, not for what's going to happen just next year or even just in 5 or 10 years, but for what's going to happen in 30 years. And so again, from the standpoint of making sure that we are making wise taxpayer investments, it's critically important that we consider trends into the future. But what we've been doing, really since World War II, is operating with one primary assumption, that we are primarily a driving culture, and that driving is going to continue to increase and increase and increase, up, up, up. But that's not happening anymore. So we're living in a new transportation reality. We'll be the first to admit we can't predict the future. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like. But it certainly raises the question, should we continue to invest in our transportation future in the same way in light of these findings? So I think there are a few important factors to consider here. The first would be, you know, we think one of the things that's really driving this shift is saturation. I mean, the reality is that, I mean, and this is probably evidenced by this room, most of us can hardly think of really anyone that doesn't have a driver's license, they're few and far between, or that doesn't have a car. And so we really kind of hit a saturation point, right, where the number of people that, you know, would have a car or a driver's license really reached the saturation point and have really peaked. But now what we're seeing is in some cases those trends are actually reversing and moving in a different direction. So that's one factor. Another would just be demographics. So as I mentioned before, the population, the baby boom generation in a lot of ways kind of drove driving trends. And during this time frame from the end of World War II through a little after 2000, the age group that was really commuting the most, primarily for work, those in the 35 to 54-year-old range, increased from 21 to 29% from 1980 to 2000. But that's now begun to decline and will fall by 25% by 2020. And of course, another big factor, which we're all well aware of, is the fact that the price of gasoline has gone sky high, right? I mean, relative to what it was. I mean, we lived in an era, really, you know, since World War II and really up until the 1980s, when gas was cheap. And we really, in the last 20 to 30 years, have seen a dramatic increase in the cost of gas, and we all know that it pinches our pocketbooks, and it's a real factor in the decisions we make. And I think not only for us is it challenging maybe the way we think about getting around and driving some of these trends, but I think a lot of young people in particular are kind of looking at the hardship that might cause their parents or some of the challenges they see economically, you know, what it costs to own a car and pay for the insurance and pay for the upkeep and pay for the registration and all the costs that come with it, and be questioning, you know, is this the future I want? So economics is a factor. So when you add all these things up, there are major headwinds in kind of the continued trends towards driving going up, up, up. And as we proclaimed with this report, a new direction, and I'll get into this more in just a second, the driving boom is over. And we need to accept that new reality. Again, we can't predict the future, and I'm going to show you we have run a few different scenarios, but the main point is that even if things were suddenly to go back to where they back to the future, as we say, we still will not be on the same trajectory that we were before, because what has happened over the last 10 years has thrown things off. So let me show you what I mean by that. A big factor is millennials. What young people are doing, and this is the largest generation in the United States right now. It's kind of another boom, like the baby boom, but it's the millennial boom. And they're heading into their peak driving years by the end of this decade. So will it last? We would guess, as many have challenged our research in saying, oh, we'll go back to the way things were before. Millennials will be driving at the same rates that their parents did, and that might happen. And we definitely think it's likely that millennials will drive more than they are now, because most of them are in college or young professionals. It is likely that as they enter the workforce, or get, you know, more established in homes and families, that they probably will drive more. But the question is, will they drive more than their parents? How much will they drive? And that we don't know. There are some good reasons, though, to believe that millennials will drive less than previous generations. And so here are a few of those. So as you can see, they're twice as likely as boomers and Gen Xers to want to live in an urban area. They use non-driving modes more than previous generations. They're biking, walking, taking transit. They want those options. They're less willing to make sacrifices to sustain a driving lifestyle. And so again, this gets to they'd rather be on their phones. They'd rather be on Facebook, Twitter, you name it, than sitting in traffic, or even for that matter, commuting in a car. That's important to them. And as you can see over there on the right, is just a poll done asking 18 to 34-year-olds, and actually all age groups were asked, but we just compare 18 to 34-year-olds and 55 and older here. In your daily routine, losing which piece of technology would have the greatest negative impact on you? And you can see cars as the green. That's much less important to millennial, the younger generation. And losing computers and mobile phones is greater. So what might the future look like? Well, so we ran three different scenarios, which we call Back to the Future, an Enduring Shift, or an Ongoing Decline. And we based these projections on, as you can see, the 2009 National Household Travel Survey, which was conducted federally, and also population projections from the US Census Bureau. So the first scenario, as I mentioned before, would be Back to the Future, where after this recent dip, we would return to really driving as much as we did in 2004 and continue to see that that trajectory into the future. The second would be an enduring shift, where the shift we've seen since 2004 is lasting and continues as millennials and others age. And then the last would be a scenario where this is just the beginning of a major shift in how we get around. Maybe. I mean, again, we can't predict the future. We don't know what the future holds. These are just three scenarios, but the third would be that maybe we are actually seeing a dramatic shift in the way we get around, and that this is just the beginning, and actually we are going to start to see declines even greater into the future, particularly given the habits of millennials. Regardless of which scenario it is, though, I mentioned before, in a bit of short foreshadowing, that none of it returns to the trends that we saw if what happened over the last 8 years didn't happen. So even Back to the Future, as you can see here, we will not continue on that same trajectory. And you can see then that the red line is an ongoing decline, where we kind of see something consistent with what we've seen over the last 8 years. And then the ongoing decline would be where we see an even greater shift than what we've seen in the last 8 years. In any of these scenarios, we are not likely to return to the trends of the past or the same trajectory that we were on going up to 2004. What's particularly troubling about this is that really our planning and our investment is completely out of touch with these trends and isn't even thus far. And I think this is a huge problem because, again, we are talking about our tax dollars. We aren't even considering different scenarios when it comes to transportation planning. And as I often say to folks, it's like it's 1950 still, or 1970, or 1980. Most people are not considering this. And again, you don't have to subscribe to this being the new reality, but something is changing. And again, even if we go back to the future, it would be reasonable to assume that we should make some minor adjustments at least. What does this mean? Well, it means some really good things, I think, for our future. Less oil consumption and pollution, less traffic congestion, less wear and tear on our roads, less need for highway expansion. All of these things are costly. And so I think this can be a good thing for our future, regardless of what happens. And these are all things, all goals, I think we can all agree we would like to achieve, right? So some positives that would come out of this, but let's talk about Wisconsin and some of the investments that we've made. This may get a little controversial. But I don't shy away from stirring up controversy, I guess. But you know, we do, again, want to make sure that we are investing wisely here. So we did this report just, as I'm sure everyone here is aware, we just finished the debate on our biennial budget. And we have started to raise a lot of questions about especially the highway expansion investment that we're doing in this state, which is incredibly costly. I mean, some of these projects are more than $1 billion. Some of them more than $2 billion. That's big money. And so, you know, our point is, hey, before we go making those big investments, which cost many years and are committing us to 10, 12, 15 years of taxpayer expenditures, let's make sure they're the right thing to do. And I'll get into our recommendations in just a minute, but, you know, I'll go on and say that, you know, I think one thing is, you know, before we expand more, maybe we should make sure that's the right thing to do. So we looked at, you know, building off of this research that we've done, we thought, well, let's look at some of the recently completed highway projects and see how does this stack up. So we looked at 7 recently completed highways in Wisconsin, and what we found that usage on those 7 recently completed highways has not developed as projected. Again, it's not a shock, right, given these trends, but we're just seeing them come, in some cases, 80% shy of the projection. And then, again, these are big expenditures, right? I mean, we're talking at least $100 million on all these projects we looked at. So big money might not be the best use of taxpayer money. This shows the percentage change in vehicle miles traveled from 2001 through 2011 and the percentage change in highway spending in Wisconsin. The top line is the change in highway spending. Whoops, sorry. The bottom line is the change in vehicle miles traveled. So as you can see, while we've seen vehicle miles traveled, it's certainly gone down since 2004, as we've already discussed, but been very steady. We've seen dramatic increases in highway expenditures in the state. And I mean, this has been true. We're looking at recent years here, but I'm going to show you another chart here briefly. I mean, really, for the last 30 years, that's been the case, and it is bipartisan. We're a nonpartisan group. We work with anyone to solve problems. Democrats and Republicans are responsible for, again, what might be some poor decisions in terms of future transportation investments. But we have seen a real spike, as you can see, since 2006. So, you know, as we say, both Governor Doyle and Governor Walker are responsible for what might not be the best transportation investments. The other big factor here is the gas tax, which is the primary source of revenue. And as I'm sure folks here are already aware, right, the gas tax revenue is declining because we have more fuel-efficient cars, and we're driving less, thus less revenue for our investments. And so the other interesting factor here, right, is that we're seeing this huge increase in highway investment, which is the biggest chunk of our state transportation budget. It ends up being just shy of half. Not only expansion, that's also maintenance, although we question some of the maintenance because some of it is defined as maintenance when it actually includes adding a lane, and that's not considered expansion. So sometimes the definitions are not quite accurate, in my opinion. But this is a real concern because we're seeing declining revenues. And of course, this is a big goal of the State Transportation Policy and Finance Commission, who came out with their findings in February. You know, and they suggested all these revenue enhancers, right? Let's increase the gas tax. Let's increase the registration fees. They were putting a lot more money in the pot, saying, hey, and their conclusion was, we need to invest in all of this stuff more. We need more highways, we need more transit, we need more bike and pedestrian infrastructure, we need more investment in our airports, in our rail, pretty much across the board, and let's throw a lot more money in the pot. We pushed back on that conclusion, saying, well, we're not sure we need all of this, and before we go throwing more money into the pot, into the transportation fund, maybe we should make sure that what we're investing in now is in our best interest. And maybe we don't even need to increase revenues. Maybe we just need to spend what we have more smartly. That's a word. So a few words of caution. It's too soon, as I've said over and over, right? We're not here to predict the future. We don't know what's going to happen. But we do know that based on what has been happening, that we need to rethink our transportation future. It may be too soon to tell which of these futures is most likely to occur. Possible futures may exist that are not presented here, and there's still many important things we don't know about the driving trends that are changing. I mean, again, this is relatively recent, but it's been sustained for 8 years, and something's afoot, and especially when you look at what particularly millennials are saying about what they want, it's a real eye-opener, and I think we need to be rethinking our transportation future. So the conclusions: it's no longer safe to assume that driving will increase as it did during the driving boom years. In fact, there's reason to believe that it's peaked for the foreseeable future. Americans will drive fewer miles than was predicted just a few years ago. And all these estimates, I should have pointed out a few charts back that, you know, we compare our three scenarios to what the current Energy Information Administration is saying, federal agency, and also to what the US DOT is projecting. And both of those pretty much have things on the same trajectory as what they have been on for decades. Again, you know, the planning has not caught up with reality, is our point. And, you know, our transportation decisions are still guided by 1950s, 1980s assumptions. We're not considering the new reality. And, you know, one of the big, you know, we stand up to powerful special interests is our tagline. And, you know, really when it comes to transportation, I'll continue to be a bit controversial here, but I think it's important to point it out. I mean, you know, again, about half of our state transportation budget is on highways. And we know one of the big powerful interests in state government is the highway lobby, road builders. It's how they make their money. We're not here to say we should stop investing in roads and highways. We appreciate that they're important, but they're sucking up a lot of resources. And we are here to say that there are other modes that are important too that are getting squeezed, shortchanged even, like transit, specialized and fixed route. We struggle in the state to find funding for that, but we hardly ever find a highway project that we're not willing to throw money at. So we're saying, hey, we need to rethink this, and we're not afraid to take those folks on and say, some of your assumptions are off, and we need to rethink it because it's our tax dollars. Let's make sure we're being smart and efficient. So our policy recommendations: let's plan and invest for uncertainty. Again, this just gets to, if we don't know that driving is going to continue to increase, should we continue to heavily invest in expansion projects, highway expansion projects in this state? Support the desire of millennials and other Americans to drive less. And I forget if I made this point before, but the millennials are the ones who have the most, at stake, because this is the transportation infrastructure they will live with and pay for. So if we're not taking into account what they want, then that seems like a big problem. And so we should account for that. We should revisit plans for new or expanded highways, since, again, that's the biggest chunk of funding. Refocus the federal role. And what we mean here is that, you know, really transportation planning at both the state and federal level are stuck in the past. And really, the federal government incentivizes state spending more money on big highway projects. It does not create the same incentives for transit, for bike and pedestrian funding. A lot of the incentive programs are, again, kind of living in a different era. So we need to rethink that. Use transportation revenue where it's most needed and do our homework, which I think is a point I'm trying to make throughout this presentation, that it's, again, time to think anew about our transportation future. We are using obsolete models, inadequate data. We need more regular surveys and more attention to the trends and scenarios. This is what we proposed, along with a few other organizations, in this year's budget, which we thought was a modest proposal. Let's cut the state highway budget put forward by Governor Walker by 10% and redirect the funds to our local roads, which I know there's some local officials in the room. I think everyone here who is a local official could speak to the need for local road investment and how that gets squeezed, and for transit. And what that would translate in a 10% increase then, the 10% solution, because it's a 10% decrease to highways, a 10% increase to transit, and a 10% increase to local roads, relative to what the governor proposed. So what are those numbers? Cutting the highway budget by $300 million, because $3 billion for highways. Increasing local roads, 10% increase would be $80 million. And a 10% increase to transit, $20 million. So just to put in perspective how much we spend on the different modes, right? So we then said, let's increase local roads and transit by 10%, which would have been $100 million of that $300 million. And then we said, let's take the additional $200 million and reduce the deficit spending in our transportation fund. Because, as you might know, the deficit spending on transportation has gone through the roof in the last decade, which is, as we like to say in politics, mortgaging our future, right? We are burdening our future budgets with debt we have to pay off, mostly to pay for these big highway projects. So that was our proposal, and we ended up with, as we like to say, the 4% solution, because we increased local road funding by 4%, and we increased transit funding by 4%. And we cut back not quite 4% on highways, but there was a modest, very modest cut to highways. But that's what we're up against. This is going to be a challenging fight ahead, I think, to rethink our transportation future, because the politics don't really lean towards kind of rethinking it in this way. So here's my contact information. As I said at the beginning, I am eager to engage with you. We, again, want to make sure that our transportation investments are smart, efficient, in the best interest of we, the people. And we are eager to work with you to make sure that we are investing in a transportation future, not a transportation past, that's going to best serve us. And I think that increasing investment in light of these findings in specialized transit and fixed route transit is critically important for our future in Wisconsin. So thanks a lot.